Hi, I'm Angela Sterrett.
I mean, you know that this cancer is inside you, and you know there's nothing being done about it. And, you know, as far as I know, it could be spreading really fast again.
Joyce Gaines is from Conception Bay South in Newfoundland, and she's undergoing palliative chemotherapy.
I'm considered terminal, so there's no cure. So I have to do whatever I can to keep it at bay and keep it from spreading any further.
Joyce started chemo in August, and she says she was responding really well to the first treatments. But then, on October 30th, a cyber attack breached Newfoundland's healthcare data center, bringing many services to a standstill. It caused Joyce to miss her fourth appointment and left her in limbo.
They haven't told me anything. The lack of communications is really disturbing. I have no idea when I'm going to get it. Every time the phone rings, I'm hoping it's a call from them saying, come on in.
That's Joyce in an interview with my colleague Peter Cowan just last week. And thankfully, she got a call shortly afterwards, booking her for an appointment just over a week after her original one. But that anxiety she felt, it's just one example from thousands of people who had healthcare canceled or delayed while the province had little to say about the cause. Interruptions from the cyber attack are easing now, but services still aren't back to normal. And now, the province is confirming that both patient and employee data were stolen. So today on Front Burner, we're going over how this attack caused so much disruption, why the province is telling us so little about it, and why these breaches are happening so often. Peter Cowan's been covering this from the start, and he's here to explain. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
So first off, I mean, give me a sense of how big a problem the cyber attack has been for healthcare in Newfoundland. I mean, over almost the last 3 weeks, what kind of services were delayed or totally stopped?
Well, right from the beginning, it was anything that wasn't an emergency or urgent, they were putting off. So that even included things like chemotherapy. Right early on, they were saying, you know, we're not going to be able to do it. And that's significant because even at the beginning of the pandemic, when they shut everything down to maintain space in hospitals, chemotherapy was one thing that they kind of prided themselves. And, you know, we've been continued to being able to offer this, no interruptions.
COVID did not impact anything for me or anybody else. I know nobody missed their treatments or their testing or whatever they needed to have done.
But then the cyber attack knocked that out. And since then, it's kind of been building things back slowly. And so, you know, they do finally have chemotherapy back. They've got radiation services. But, you know, even in the biggest hospital in the province, the Health Sciences Center, they're still only dealing with emergency or urgent surgeries. So, you know, I was talking to one person who was supposed to go in to get their cancer operated on. It was supposed to happen November 1st. They still don't know when that's going to be rebooked for.
Having cancer is like having a full-time job because there are so many appointments, you know. So this week, for instance, because of the cyber attack, I've missed 6 appointments, and that's just me. So how many other people have missed at least that many appointments? It's
frightening for her. And I think there's a lot of anxiety amongst people as they are sort of sitting there going, I've got something that maybe doesn't qualify as an emergency, but this is a big healthcare issue for me, and I don't even know when it's going to be dealt with.
I mean, people might be asking, how does a hack of a data center cause all of these disruptions to services in the first place?
A lot of this is because healthcare, like everything else, has become very digitally based. And so, you know, when you go into the hospital, when they check you in, they put all your information into the computer. When they order new meds, when they need to get blood work done, when they need to send you for a scan, all of that goes into a computer system. So when that computer system goes down, all those tools that the doctors have in a hospital in order to treat people, they disappear. And what hospitals went back to was operating the same way they did 30 years ago, which is if you need blood work done, you fill out a paper form, someone runs that form down to the lab, someone comes by, draws the blood gets tested, and then that result, it gets printed off on a sheet of paper, and you run it right back up. And so the issue they had was they just couldn't deal with the same capacity of people in the hospital anymore because everything was having to go to paper backups. And, you know, that may not sound like, okay, well, you can just print it off. But if you're dealing with thousands and thousands of tests a day, that's a lot of paperwork and it really slows things down.
And just to be clear here, we still don't officially even know what the nature of this attack was because the province is just calling it a cyber attack. But based on your reporting, what does it seem like the hackers did? I mean, what did they want?
Money is the main motivation behind these attacks. And, you know, the experts I've talked to have said, like, they're pretty confident that this is a, you know, a ransomware type attack and what they refer to as double extortion, which sounds like the name of a really cool action movie. But what it really is, you know, the first thing they do is they lock up the data so that you can't get access to it. And if you want to get it back, you're going to have to pay the ransom. And because some people will say, fine, I got backups. You keep that locked data. We'll just wipe it clean and start from scratch. The second part of that extortion is we've taken your personal information and we are going to release it to the world unless you give us this money back. You know, so the big question is, you know, did the province pay to keep this information secret? Is it possible that it's still going to be released onto the dark web? So far, they say there's no evidence that this information has been misused. But once the information's out there, you know, it's hard to get it back.
And knowing what a huge problem this attack has become for healthcare, I just want to get into how the government handled it. So in the first few days after the attack on October 30th, just how slowly was the province giving us information about it?
On the first day, we kind of got a few hints because I was hearing from people who said, I tried to go online and fill out the form to get a COVID test, but the form won't even load. And then it was for folks arriving in the province to fill out the paperwork they need to prove they're vaccinated upon arrival, things like that. That form wasn't working. And, you know, so we started putting feelers out to the province to say, okay, what's going on here? What's the backup plan? And thinking the urgency was, well, what about people who need to get a COVID test and they now can't get one? And it wasn't until sort of the next day that we started hearing from folks inside the system that says, oh, yeah, this is a whole lot bigger. You know, I've had sources within the government say this is a ransomware attack, and yet the province 2.5 weeks in has refused to say, have there been any demands made for money? Have they paid out a ransom? All of this, they've said, look, our experts are telling us not to do anything to inflame the situation, so we're refusing to answer any of these questions. We were days into this before they even said, you know what, this is a cyber attack. You know, the rest of the province had kind of all figured it out by the time the minister had finally gone up and said, yep, we're willing to admit it.
And I've seen video of the deputy premier aggressively deflecting questions just a few days afterwards.
On the healthcare systems and the requirements of same.
But one of the very basic questions that the opposition asked today, which you didn't answer, was, has a ransom demand been made?
We are working with the proper authorities and working with the experts that are required. As the Attorney General has pointed out, the RCMP have been engaged and they are working through this issue.
But that's a yes or no question and I didn't get
that. Is not a yes or no question. This is a security question. And I'm telling you that we are working with the proper authorities.
What are they saying about why they're being so tight-lipped about it so far?
We're kind of left to read between the lines because what we don't know is what sort of demands were made. You know, did these attackers say, look, if you go out in the media and even mention that we might be behind this or even mention this attack, we will delete all your data. And again, we don't have that information to be able to know, you know, is this actually the best practice or is government using this as a shield to avoid responsibility? Because, you know, we've been kind of been able to tease out little details. For example, the fact that, you know, these hackers were able to get access to patient information. So all that information you supply when you first go into the hospital, including information like which doctor are you seeing and why have you come into the hospital? They've also got access to patient information. They got access to employee information, including things like social insurance numbers, addresses, dates of birth, all the things you'd need in order to steal people's identity. And one of the questions we said was, hold on a second, were they able to access this information unencrypted? And the answer was yes. And so that's led to lots of follow-up questions about, well, hold on, why was this personal information sitting there unencrypted? And the answer they've said is, we won't talk about what we encrypt and what we don't. It could only write a handbook for future attacks. So yet another, you know, opportunity for them to kind of shut down some real questions about whether or not they were following best practices and doing enough in order to protect and safeguard this critical information that they have under their control.
I know Fredericton cybersecurity expert David Shipley called this attack the worst in Canadian history.
We've never seen a health network take down this large ever. We've seen specific hospitals, but never this many hospitals, healthcare centers, other things. And the severity of this is what really sets it apart. We've seen breaches before and ransomware attacks against other industries, but healthcare is in that top tier of it has real impacts on human life and safety. And this is the worst of the worst.
The difference that we've had with this attack is it's not just one hospital. This has been the entire health network across a province, and it's now been 2.5 weeks, and we still have some areas that can't do routine surgeries. So never before have we seen an attack that's sort of lasted this long in terms of the disruption, but also the geographic disruption that we're not just dealing with one hospital here or, you know, a health center there. The fact that we're dealing with this across an entire system.
We've seen cases where only one facility was exposed in hacks. Just this weekend, the Rideau Valley Health Center in Ottawa said its service is being disrupted by a quote-unquote cybersecurity incident. So why did the attack in Newfoundland affect so much of the province?
Part of this is because, unlike places like Ontario, where the hospitals are kind of run independently, the health system here is all run by four health authorities, and they've kind of centralized all of their computer infrastructure behind the Newfoundland and Labrador Center for Health Information. So, you know, there are cost savings by sort of bringing this all together, bringing the expertise into one place rather than having four different systems. But that means when there's an attack like this, it affects all four health authorities, not just one. And the challenge we have is, if someone is really sick and needing a procedure, then, you know, in Ontario, if you've got one hospital down, you can send them to another hospital. But when you've got the entire healthcare system down and you're largely an island or a remote chunk of mainland, there's not a lot of options. You know, and they've been able to sort of triage and make sure the most urgent cases are getting done. But I kind of like to use the analogy, you know, healthcare is a bit like a river. There's always this need coming in and people being dealt with. And if you immediately dam up that river, that water doesn't disappear. It's backing up. And so the longer this goes on, the more and more pressure is building behind the system that they're going to have to deal with.
Experts have been drawing parallels between the attack in Newfoundland and an attack in Ireland that happened in May.
Behind, Irish officials say hospitals can't even carry out routine diagnostic procedures. There are significant delays in emergency departments, and even basic communications are impossible. The head of the Irish National Health Service called it a stomach-churning criminal act in the midst of a global pandemic.
It's just quite an extraordinary thing to do. And there's no doubt it is a vicious and a callous act and will be condemned everywhere by decent people.
Waterloo, Ontario cybersecurity expert Mark Sangster actually argues that the same gang called the Conti could be behind both attacks.
Is that they're incredibly sort of ferocious when they come to doing this. They're extremely heartless. So when they shut down a hospital or a municipality or a law enforcement service, it doesn't matter to them that that might actually have, you know, an impact on, you know, people's health or their safety.
Looking to Ireland as an example, what does it take for a healthcare system to recover from an attack like this?
Ireland is a really interesting example because they took a very different approach from Newfoundland and Labrador, and they were much more transparent. So they said right up front, this is a ransomware attack, and we're not going to pay. Mm-hmm. And they took a very hard line. Within a week, the attackers actually gave them the key to decrypt their health information. Unfortunately, that's not enough to kind of get the services back up and running. You can't just kind of flip the switch and go, we're now back to the way things were. It's been months and months and months of rebuilding. You know, at one point, they had a ballroom where they had like hundreds of people all sitting there with computers, wiping them clean because they had to make sure that none of this nefarious software was hiding out in some workstation somewhere. You know, so throughout the hospital, they had sort of green and red tags. If there was a red tag on it, it's like, this is an infected computer, don't use it. So, you know, they needed to make sure that they scrubbed any evidence of this right out of their systems, because the danger is, you know, you may get your system back today, but the attackers may come back in tomorrow and decide to lock it up again and demand another ransom, or they may sell that backdoor access to another criminal gang and saying, look, go back in a couple of weeks from now or a couple of months from now when they think they're back up and running and hit them again. So unfortunately, the Ireland example is, even when you get the key to unlock the data, there's still a lot of damage, and they have ended up spending about five times the original ransom demand just on repairing and rebuilding their systems. The ransom is often the least of the costs when it comes to rebuilding from these attacks.
So Ireland didn't pay the ransom, but there's been big cases where attack victims just pay to have their data released. U.S. meatpacker JBS says they paid the equivalent of $11 million U.S., both morally and financially. If there's a ransomware attack on healthcare, what's the debate over whether to just pay the ransom or not?
It's a tricky situation because on the one hand, you pay this money, it goes directly into the criminal hands. They spend it on research and development to develop better tools to attack more people, and you only make the situation worse. So do you take the hit personally and pay out more money, deal with more disruption in the hopes that you're able to, you know, for the greater good of trying to make sure these criminals aren't successful, or do you just pay the ransom? You get the key and you get back up and running faster. And, you know, I was talking to one expert who said normally his advice is always never pay the ransom, that, you know, this only makes the situation worse. You're only encouraging the criminals. But he said, you know, when you're dealing with healthcare and you're dealing with life or death,
when you're talking about patient care, if that is the only choice that they have left in the situation they're in, I can't condemn that because it's people's lives.
And it seems like we're routinely hearing about cyber attacks on healthcare right now. Why are we seeing this dramatic increase in these types of hacks?
Yeah, the experts that I've talked to have said, you know, it is the fact that healthcare has been strained during the pandemic. It's become a clearly essential service. And so the need is there to keep these services up and running. So people are going to pay. You know, these criminals, their main focus is, who can I convince to pay me the most amount of money for the least amount of work that I have to do? So healthcare systems are an area where people can't afford to be down for a couple of weeks. And I think a lot of people here in Newfoundland and Labrador have been wondering, okay, well, why did they pick us? And what I'm hearing from experts is, you know, this is not that they woke up one morning and said, Newfoundland, you know, they've got a lot of money, we're going to go after them. But these sorts of attacks, they are constantly trying to find weaknesses in any computer system. And, you know, healthcare is one area they're looking at. And so once they find that little hole, that little back door, the way that they can channel into the system, they're going to go for it.
And there's been big cases like we've talked about in the U.S., like JBS, and there's a hack that shut down the Colonial Fuel Pipeline.
Arguably, it is the single most important pipeline in the United States. Basically, this takes oil and gas, jet fuel, refined products from the Houston and Louisiana areas and brings it up the East Coast. The main pipes comes up through Virginia and New York and New Jersey. Let's put this into perspective.
Is it fair to say that it seems like many of these cases are in Canada? And if so, why are these happening in our country?
It's an interesting question because, you know, you mentioned the attack just recently in Ottawa. There was another hospital that was affected near Toronto. Saskatchewan has had, so there have been numerous healthcare systems that have been targeted by hackers in Canada. One of the speculations from the cybersecurity experts has been the U.S. has had a fair crackdown, especially after that Colonial Pipeline attack where, you know, they did pay the money. But we saw President Joe Biden come out very strongly within days of that attack saying, you know what, we are not going to stand for this. We are going to take every measure we can. We're going to go after the attackers where they live and work and the people who are hiding them. You know, he specifically called out the Russians, not for directly sanctioning this, but for allowing this to happen within their system.
We do not believe, I emphasize, we do not believe the Russian government was involved in this attack. But we do have strong reason to believe that the criminals who did the attack are living in Russia. We have been in direct communications with Moscow about the imperative for responsible countries to take decisive action against these ransomware networks.
So that kind of, you know, put the attackers on the defensive, and they kind of wanted to take the heat off. And so that's why they may have been looking for areas that are not the United States to attack. It is worth noting here that more than 2 weeks into this attack, we haven't heard a single thing from the Prime Minister, from the new ministers, you know, in charge of things like public security. We've asked to speak to those ministers and, you know, we get a few generic statements back. But there has been a very different approach from the U.S. that, you know, made a very public hard line that we're not going to stand for this, and the Canadian government, which has been quiet on this. It's going to be one of the questions, certainly, as we go down and sort of move out the other side of this is, you know, what needs to be done to protect systems. But I think it is a lesson for all healthcare systems across the country that these vulnerabilities do exist. And we've got some very motivated people who are looking for a payout, and they don't care what they disrupt in the course of trying to get that.
Peter, thank you so much for taking us through this really excellent reporting you've done on this story.
Thanks. Happy to do it.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening to Front Burner. I'm Angela Sterrett, in for Jamie Poisson.